All right. Welcome, everyone. This is the Verifiable Credential API call. This is Tuesday, March 28th. Our agenda is here. On the agenda today is some community updates from ITF. And then issue processing. We got through our long-term issues last time. So all pull requests have been processed, so we won't be doing pull request processing. Today on the agenda is discoverability features for the API. An issue that says, why do we believe it's a good idea to return an issued credential to an internal caller, which has turned into a different discussion, so we need to process that. And that question really has to do with auth z for endpoints and whether or not endpoints need auth z. And given that we have a first cut of both of those things in the spec now, in theory, we should be able to address issues 48 and 279, but we'll see how the conversation goes today. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else that we would like to discuss today? Go ahead, John.
I'm not sure if it's an agenda point or a community update, but I have just a brief update about the OWF presentation.
Let's start off with that.
Okay. So I have maybe just a quick preamble. So as I've mentioned for the past couple of weeks, I'm hoping to do a presentation about VC API to the Open Wallet Foundation. The Open Wallet Foundation is a group that's building wallet components, implementations. They're not building standards. And I think that the VC API would be a good standard for them to have an implementation of. So the first step, they've released their proposal process, and the first step is to present to propose a project to them and to present the overview first in their tech architecture community meeting. So I've been preparing a presentation. I'm wondering, could I take maybe 1 minute to share the presentation?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay.
That'd be great.
All right. I will quickly share my screen. Like I said, hopefully it really is just 1 minute. And let's see here. Okay. Let me know if this comes up.
Yep. You can see it.
Right. So this is a work in progress, but I thought just quickly going through it to see if I'm on the right track would be good. So I think previously I'd mentioned this HackMD document with the outline, and it is essentially the same. So I now have slides representing that. So a preface, some background on VC API, use cases, design objectives, some goals, architecture, authorization, and then going through the different endpoints. Test suites.
Could you go a bit slower?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a lot. So what I'll just finish very quickly going through test suites, implementation, and then I'm thinking of doing a demo at the end. I'm glad to, take it in as slower indeed. But I don't want to take too much time from this meeting. So, maybe if there is time, I'm glad to talk about it more, answer any questions, or go through it in more detail, or maybe go in more detail in another meeting as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. So first of all, thank you very much, John, for putting this together. That's great. Structure looks really good, to me. We should definitely take some time on this call to go through it in detail. I'm wondering if, after you get a little more added, to the, or you feel like it's in a state where you want to present it, or feel like it's a solid, first draft, you have everything in there that you want, maybe we can take, 30 minutes in a call and you do go run through the presentation with us and we can provide feedback. Would that be helpful?
That sounds great.
Okay. So let's schedule that for next week. Does that work for you, or do you want a little more time?
Should be okay. If it doesn't, I'll let you know. Thanks.
Okay. All right. And no big deal if not, and if I forget to put it on the agenda, we can just replace the agenda with this thing, with the presentation and talking through it, because it is important to communicate this to OWF.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks again, John. That's great stuff. Patrick, did that address your question or concern?
Yeah, that's fine. It's just I was interested, but I think that the form looks nice, but I was interested to see a bit more in detail the points, but we can see take time to discuss in depth next week, definitely.
Okay, sounds good. John, was there I think you there was just an open invitation to come and present and no date set, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. They at the OWF, you mean?
Yes, yep, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, there's no date set. They are looking for people to present on their Monday meeting, so there's plenty of slots available at currently anyways.
Okay. Patrick?
Yeah, do you have, John, an idea of like what other type of presentations are made? Like what other projects? Because I'm assuming the way you are applying, other people are applied to the presentation. Do you know like the type of presentation are being made?
Yeah, all the meetings for the Open Wallet Foundation have been recorded. So I can find the link here. I'll put it in the chat.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, John. Let's see. Community updates. So IETF 116 is going on right now. I had two things to present there. One of them was a, multi-format. So let me go ahead and share screen window that. I presented, multi-formats, which we use in verifiable credentials in a variety of places and use in DIDs in a variety of places. So like DIDKey is using the multi-base format and the multi-key format. We are looking into, we meaning the community in general is looking at ways of cryptographically linking between verifiable credentials, like if you want to say, you know, render this credential using this SVG image, and here's a SHA-256 bit hash for that image so that you can digitally sign over it and know that you're pulling in cryptographically signed resources like a SVG file to do the rendering. Multi-hash can come in to play there. We presented this to Dispatch. There's a group of people. So like, I think it's something like 29 implementers signed a letter of, implementers and users of the technology signed a letter of like request to IETF to adopt the, technology. The, Dispatch outcome, is here for multi-formats. So the proposal was to effectively, and let me put this, link in here as well. IETF 116 multi-format slide presentation. So the proposal was for the IETF to, adopt and find a home for multi-base, multi-hash. The Dispatch outcome was that IETF found the work useful. They proposed two ways for us to, do the work. This work has been incubated in the credentials community group for years now. So they suggested either we can have a little mini working group at IETF to move the work forward, or we can go straight to ISC, which is basically an independent submission stream, where you don't change anything. You just publish the document. It's informational and it's out there with a, you know, a solid, RFC assigned to it, number assigned to it. it looks like we're probably going to go the mini working group route because they promised that it would be a fast turnaround and, effectively as fast as having the work AD sponsored. They're going to experiment on us a bit. The worst that's probably going to happen is that it takes a little longer to get the RFC than if we went the other route. And that's it. So that's a really good outcome. Like that's positive. There was quite a bit of grumbling about the design of multi-formats and all that kind of stuff, but that's always to be expected at ITF when you expose them to anything new. Go ahead, Patrick.
Does this have to do with the visual representation of referral credential, or did I get this wrong?
Sorry, let me, it is tangentially related to that. We would use a multi-hash to point to what the visual rendering representation would be, or you would use a multi-hash to point to another verifiable credential from within a verifiable credential. Let me give you an example here. Like this is multi-base and the multi-format here is, the letter U, which says that the rest of this string is a, base 64 URL encoded, string with no padding. So that's what this letter U does. So it's a tiny little header that goes on data. And then the rest of the data, so this is hello world encoded as base64 URL with no padding. You put a little U in the front of it, and this whole thing is a multibase value. So did key is a multibase value. The Z means this value is base 58 Bitcoin encoded. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, for anyone not familiar with multi-formats, they are all about having values that are self-describing. So if you get a string or a byte array in, you can look at that thing and determine what it represents. So if you're getting a string, you can look at the beginning of the string, and there's a header there that tells you how the data is encoded. And so base encoded means you converted a byte array into some characters, so you could represent it as a string. By looking at the first character, you can determine what the base is, and then you can remove the encoding to get a byte array. Then the byte array itself is self-describing. And I might talk about how the byte array represents a hash with a certain algorithm, or it might represent a public key or a private key, or maybe a digital signature or something like that. And so what's key here is this is for having these simple opaque values that you can put in other places that are self-describing.
And how do you, is there a way to know that the value you get has this sort of multi-encoded mini header? Or
yeah, so that would be based on whatever spec you're using. So if you're using like the DidKey spec, it would say the value you're getting is a multi-format value. Mm-hmm. And so when you get that in, you can you parse like a did key URL, the value, so that the scheme is did, the did method is key, and then the value of that is a multi-format value. And so you can use all of the multi-format libraries and self-describing header information to determine what follows.
Okay, so like the proof value from what you are showing here, like the Z would represent
That's right.
Whatever the Z represents.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. The Z or Z for Canadians and people from the British other British places. The Z represents, it indicates that the value there is a base 58 encoded byte array. So if you use a base 58 decoder, you can decode the value starting at 4. So you need a header.
That's why I always had a hard time decoding
base 58. So base 58 is an encoding mechanism that's different from base 64. Base 58 is used because it removes some letters, that can be commonly confused with others, like L and 1 can be easily confused depending on the font that's being used. And by removing those, you can avoid some potential problems, which is very important when you're dealing with cryptography or financial data and things like that.
Wow, this was okay. It's very glad I get to know this now.
Yeah, so other letters removed are like zeros and the letter O. Since those things can be confused, that those get taken out, and that's why you have a lower number at 58 instead of 64.
Interesting. Thank you.
Dimitri. You might be dope.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to add two things to what Jay said about how do you tell that something is in multi-format. So as Dave mentioned, hopefully you'll know by the fact. So I always know that when dealing with a digit key, it's always going to be base 8 encoded, and I can proceed from there. If you're writing some sort of command line tool or something else where you're parsing values that could be multi-format and could be something else, that's also a fairly common situation. And there, the thing to do is just to try to code it. So I've frequently written code that's like, okay, does the string start with a Z? All right, there's a good chance that it's multi-format. Go ahead and pass it off to the multi-format decode. If that throws an error, okay, then it's not. Then proceed down some other route. But if it decodes, there's a very high probability that that's what it was intended, and so on. So I just wanted to add that notion there. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Dimitri. Basically, if you're using VCAPI and you're using DIDKEY, you are definitely using multibase and multi-key. And so that's why, you know, it's of relevance to this group, is that this stuff, this tiny little building block, you know, made it into IETF, and now we have to shepherd it through the process. Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring this back to Patrick's original question, because he asked about how does this relate to like a display or rendering hint in a VC. And the way that it's related is in just expressing a hash value. So a rendering hint could reference a template or a URL for like an SVG, just like some other link inside of a VC or any other document. If you're pointing to an external URL that has some content there, you might want to include a hash of that content in your data so that when someone goes and fetches it later, they can make sure that it's the same thing that it was intended to be, that it hasn't changed. And a way to represent a hash in a single string in a nice, simple, opaque value is through multi-formats.
And so that's what's being shown on the screen here as an example of like your verifiable credentials linking to some kind of rendering template that's got the SVG itself, but associated with it is a digest multibase value, which is a SHA. So this will have a header for how it's base encoded, and it will also have a header for the type of hash it is, like SHA-2 256-bit. So the first couple of characters here tells you that this is a SHA-2 256-bit thing, so you're going to end up downloading this, doing a SHA-2 256 on it, and the value should match. And then this thing, this whole thing here, is digitally signed over as an example.
Just real quick, I want to make one other really important point, is that multi-formats takes a different approach from some other more broken out formats where they would include individual component information in the JSON. So you might imagine some JSON that would say like hash algorithm and then the value SHA-256 and maybe some other components. Or you might imagine a JWK that has different components, cryptographic components of a key laid out in the JSON. And multi-formats takes a totally different approach, which is separation of information through encapsulation, so that these values are just opaque blobs in the JSON, because at the JSON layer, you shouldn't be doing anything with this data. And that helps you avoid having to do extra validation comparing the different components. You know, do these match up? Is this even right? Now I've got to have extra JSON schema and extra checks to make sure that what I'm doing at the crypto layer is right at the data modeling layer. This avoids all of that by just dropping an opaque value into these places, and you pass that off to the crypto layer and just let that thing do all the validation and everything that it needs to do. So it's a cleaner separation of layers through this modeling.
Go ahead, Patrick. And then after that, we're going to move on probably.
Yeah. Thank you very much. So my part two of my question, if it was for visual representation, was I hear a lot about OCA layer for like mobile wallets. Does this have anything to do with this at all, or maybe not, or?
No.
Perfect.
I mean, I've heard of the OCA stuff and I have, you know, read, at some point read through, you know, the docs, but it feels quite more complex, and it's quite a bit more complex than just like this thing, right? It's got many aspects to it. Same, you could see it in the same category of solution, certainly.
I mean, eventually there'll be a link to be made though.
Yep. Okay. Anyway, that's why it was brought up. We use multibase and multi-digest we use multi-formats quite a bit in verifiable credentials, and the data sent to and received from the VC API uses multi-formats quite heavily. All right. That's it for that. So that was good news. And that's it for community updates. Any other community updates before we jump into, topics? Okay. One more reminder that, we have a ton of, issues that are marked ready for PR. In fact, we have 29 changes to the specification that could be made, if someone were to pick up one of these PRs. So this is just a request to the community. If you have some spare time, and can spend, you know, maybe an hour writing a PR, there are a lot of PRs here that you might be able to pick from and update the spec on. Okay. So, in fact, we could cut the number of issues we have in half if we did PRs for all the ready for PR items, which is good. It shows we're making progress. We're just not making applying that to the text in the spec just yet. We'll get there. Okay. Next item up, API lacks required discoverability features. This was raised by, Mike Varley. This was raised by Ori, and I think Mike Varley put in a PR to add this, and I thought we had this in the spec. Let me check to make sure. Exchange discovery. So we have this concept, the thing looks broken. The rendering's broken right now. I need to fix that. But we do have exchange discovery in there, right now. However, for this item, the last time we discussed this was last April. There's a question on whether or not we should close this. There were three concrete proposals made by Ori. One, the API uses OS3.0 and defines security schemes. We have done that, and that has been merged. So we've addressed that item. That the APIs can use a link header, for suite and issuer ID discovery. We have not discussed that. And then the APIs can use a well-known JSON resource for conveying supported issuer IDs and suites. So we kind of talked about that, but did not really get to the bottom of that. So there's a decent bit of discussion that went on here, but not much has been pushed forward as far as discussion's concerned. So in order to close this issue, we would probably need to address these questions and these proposals. So if folks are okay with structuring the discussion in that way to determine whether or not we can close this or not, we could go ahead and start. Go ahead, Longley.
Sure, I'm fine with structuring it that way. I would say proposals 2 and 3, given what we have learned and now added in issues and plan to add to the spec around configurations and instances, I don't think it makes any sense to do proposal 2 and 3 because there's not a use case I can think of where a client would discover some existing issuer configuration and then decide to use it. Instead, it would be the case that an instance configuration would be created and given to a client. There's not, I can't think of a use case that it makes sense that a client would come along, make a request to some issuing service. It would list out all of its configurations and the client would pick one of these, and the client would hope to find a configuration that they could use like that. On top of it, I don't see any reason why the client would even have the authorization to use those instances. And it seems like it would violate, minimizing authorization to limiting authorization to those parties that should be able to use a particular configuration.
So your suggestion is we've addressed proposal 1. We've done proposal 1, and 2 and 3 don't make any more sense because of the consensus we have on the instances and how these things are configured.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Go ahead, Patrick.
So in the spec currently, it lists a discovery under the exchange endpoint, if I understand. When I was doing, a while ago, I was doing a sort of a ACAPI, VCAPI coordinator project when I was trying to learn about the VCAPI, and I mapped the exchange endpoint to discover feature endpoint on the ACAPI, which returns you a list of all the DIDCOM protocols that are supported by the agent. Is that the idea here, is to sort of return a list of all the exchange that you can engage with, all the types of exchange that you can engage with, so like a issue credential, a present proof, or whatever else exchange are defined? Is that kind of the idea of discovery?
Go ahead, Dave.
So that might have been at least a piece of that might be part of what exchange discovery could have been about. But I don't think that that's this issue. I think unfortunately this issue says it just says API lacks required discoverability features, but I think it's really talking about issuer discovery. And I don't think issuer discovery makes sense. But it might make sense for a client to be able to figure out if an exchange, what protocols an exchange supports for delivery of VCs. But I think maybe that's a different issue.
Hey, Joe?
I want to support what Dave's presented. But I also want to highlight, I'm not sure that's going to address their concerns. Like, I think they want discovery in a manner that I don't like. So I'm really happy with sort of Dave's approach. I think it's more secure. I think it's not advertising all the ways that you might attack a particular server for people who maybe don't have authorization to use those services. But I think there is a conversation to get back to Mike and Ori and say, is there a use case that's important here? Let's get it in the conversation. Because I think they'd say yes, even though Dave and I are struggling to find a use case for it.
Right. It was first. Patrick, you're up.
Yeah, so the first thing I would say, if the title said API lacks required discovery feature, for me, that probably tells me there was some kind of use case in mind when this has been written. My second point was, so you said, I don't think it's a good idea because it would allow people to do some sort of, exploit some sort of vulnerability. Doesn't that statement imply that this is sort of a security by obscurity approach by not allowing people to discover what is there, which I'm not a big fan of the security by obscurity approach in the system. I think making information public sort of forces you to be accountable for your solution and to have a good implementation, but that maybe I misinterpreted what's been said.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so I think this issue was filed prior to us spelling out how to do instances and configurations to resolve the issues we had with the previous design that was built around implementing to a test suite instead of real use cases or, you know, real applications. And the instance, once we introduced instances and configurations, I think it became clear that it doesn't make sense to have this kind of discovery.
Something's going on.
Yeah, someone needs to mute. Not sure who, but the previous design was such that, you know, you would have like a single endpoint and you could ask what issuers you could issue from, and, you know, what suites you supported. And that idea is kind of like, any client could come along. Presumably with the client would at least have to have permission to use the service, but I guess it would have permission to use the service generally to do anything with the service. And it could come along and use any endpoint, any issuer. It could issue any credential from any issuer using any suite that the system supported. And you would have to give it authorization to be able to do all of those things to be able to use this feature as described. And the new system doesn't do security through obscurity, but rather there are different issuer configurations. And if you want to use one of those, you get permission to use that particular one. And you would know which one that when you're in order for a client to get this permission to do anything, it would need to know which one of these it's hitting, and it would request permission to use that. Or it would be assigned permission to use that by handing it either an object capability to hit that particular resource, or you would hand it a OAuth2 token to hit that particular resource with a scope and audience pinned to that resource.
All right, so I'll go ahead, Patrick. I think I don't know if you're on the queue still or.
Yeah, maybe just add a comment around. So when we say you have a different instance for, sorry, I'm getting feedback from somewhere. Thank you. So we say there's a different instance per implementation. How does that compare to a sort of multi-tenancy model? If I think like ACAPI, I can have one ACAPI agent that does multi-tenancy for different organizations. So I could have multiple issuer based on the same agent, and each issuer would control their own wallet. But here we have... This is sort of separate. So we have really the full instance for each issuer, or is there a concept of multi-tenancy that we are describing here?
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, Alan's on the queue before me.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah. So we had this problem eSpeak where any things you want anybody to be able to discover them. For other things, simply knowing something exists gives you a point of attack. And so we solve that by having an oak place where you could go and get a capability that would then let you search for things that you want any random person to be able to find. So, you know, you can have the best of both worlds. Students, a system that anybody can hit will return services that are available. And, or with some authentication can return a capability that you search for things that you prefer to be hit.
Great. Thank you, Alan. Dave, you're up next.
Right. So I was going to respond to Patrick. Multi-tenancy, the individual instances. So an implementation can have many different instances, and that should cover multi-tenancy. So any given implementation could expose, N many issuers, each one having its own, credential slash issue endpoint that hangs off at the end of it. So that might have been where the confusion was. It's not that a single implementation only exposes one endpoint. It exposes as many instances as it wants. Each instance has its own credential issuance endpoint.
All right. Okay, so going back to this stuff here, I want to start focusing on each question. So, how does an API know how does a client know which suites an API supports? Go ahead, Patrick.
I'm just going to throw what I understand from the discussion. So how does he know what certain APIs support is because the endpoint that's going to be given to it, the client is going to explicitly define this, and it's sort of expected that when a client receive an endpoint to an API, it already knows what configuration this endpoint is given to it based on the ecosystem. Is that correct?
I believe it is. I want to make it a bit clearer so that when Ori comes and reads this, it's clear. The instance endpoint given to the client is explicitly configured with a particular cryptographic suite. When the client receives the endpoint, it will know what suite is configured for that instance endpoint. I guess you could argue that it doesn't know it, but it might not matter. Like, it will make a call and it will be signed with whatever crypto suite's set for that endpoint. So it doesn't need to know. It's just given an endpoint that that it uses. So it doesn't have to configure the endpoint at all. Let me try and change this. When the client makes a call to the instance endpoint, the cryptographic suite is set ahead of time and used. It is not configurable. Unless through an extension to the VC API, I guess we should say that, because I think the traceability folks think about that a bit differently, where they do want that kind of configurability. Go ahead, Patrick.
I just thought of the idea, maybe instead of being discoverable, it's provided. So there would be like a sort of configuration step that the client would need to take before to integrate this system.
Yep. Configuration is provided. The client.
Sorry, I meant instead of being discoverable.
instead of being discoverable, the configuration is provided to the client. Okay.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
It was provided to the client prior to the call?
Just prior to the integration with the system.
Okay. Done. Maybe. All right. How do you know what the issuer's ID, what issuer IDs and API supports, and which ones are supplied in the post body to create valid VCs? This is the answer here is the same as the above.
Yeah. And again, this was written before, mm-hmm. we removed providing the issuer ID in the API because that's not a thing that you do.
The issuer ID is no longer provided in the API unless done via an extension to the VC API. Go ahead, Patrick.
Maybe that's this point here, but I'm wondering if there should be some discoverability, like, let's say I'm a scenario, I'm a student, I have a wallet, you know, that's provided by the school or whatever, and the school can issue me a certain set of credential, like, let's say my membership or my, grades or whatever. These are the credentials that I can be issued, and I want to be able to be reissued in case I lose my wallet or reset my phone or whatever. So should there be like an endpoint that's like the client is already compatible with the issuer, but it gives me a choice of like which credential you want issued today. Do you want your membership, your test results, or this? I can request it. And since I'm already authenticated, it's going to issue me the right values in my credential.
Go ahead, Dave. Hold on. Did I clear Alan from the queue before? I don't know. Alan, is that an old queue? I'm presuming it's an old queue. Go ahead, Dave.
So I think this gets to where some of the confusion was, because the client that we're talking about here is a client that has OAuth 2 credentials. It's within the trust boundary of the issuer. And so the client we're talking about is never a digital wallet. And if we're talking about a digital wallet, they're interacting with the exchange's API. So a digital wallet would not be talking directly with the issuer service.
Okay.
All right. Next item, know what credential formats are supported. Again, the answer I think is the same as the above. Like when you call an exchange's endpoint, that exchange's endpoint in theory in the future could issue a verifiable credential or a CL sign blob or a MDL or an MDoc or whatever credential format you want, right? Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I think the main thing here is that this is sort of top-down administration because this is all through within a trust boundary. The way that this would work is you would set up instances that are intended to be used by specific clients. It's not that there are clients that would be out in the wild browsing an issuer service looking for some configuration that they could reuse, and there would be no way for them to even get authorization to use it. We would have to have additional API service for them to ask for that. Instead, it's you have some administrator that's saying, I have these pieces of software that are going to need to be able to issue credentials through the issuing service. And so I need to create these instances for them to use. And then it will add those URLs and whatever authorization tokens are required to those clients so that they can use them. And to add to that, I think this discovery thing came from the idea that there would be a single endpoint for issuing credentials, which is coming from that test suite driven design. And when we turned that on its head and fixed it based on use cases and applications instead, this problem of discoverability, I think, mostly just went away.
Yeah. And so the same thing for authc. Each endpoint can support a variety of different authc, but when you configure an instance endpoint, you very specifically say, this is the type of authc that's required on this endpoint, and you will communicate that to the client out of band.
You've got auth and all above that, and being authz or auth?
Authc.
Above.
Oh, yeah, that was the original text. I don't know if I want to. I think they were talking about, I'm almost certain, Alan, that they were talking about authc, not authn.
Okay. Well, just be careful, because I've read a bunch of stuff and I just see authn get confused.
Yep. Yeah, you totally agree with you. Even though this points to authn, the section that they point to is actually authc. Because Swagger can feud authn and authc as well. Okay. So, this has been done. This has been done and is in the latest spec. These two proposals have been addressed via the instances mechanism in the VC API spec, which pre-configures instance endpoints with issuer IDs, crypto suites, and other authz mechanisms and other administrator or system provided configurations. Those instance endpoints are then given to the appropriate clients. Okay, so the question is, do we have consensus to close this given that we have addressed all of the points? Would anyone object to, we need to ask them, did we miss anything? Or can we close the issue? And the use cases team would like to understand the use case that you have, so that we can analyze it, to make sure that we've covered the use case. All the above, the group has a few questions. One, does this address the initial use cases you had? And then is the solution appropriate for the use cases you have?
I think those are the same question. I think question two would just be, can we close this issue now?
The group feels like we've addressed all of the initial points raised in the issue. It's really a question to Ori and Farley. Given all of the above, the group has two questions. Okay. So we'll mark that. Let me ask, does anyone have objections to marking this pending close? Meaning that, as long as they don't object to closing it, we will close it as long as we get answers to these two questions. Any objections? All right, that's that item. It is 52 past the hour. We will not be able to address these other two questions in 3 minutes. So next week's call is going to be listening to John's presentation on Verifiable Credential API, providing any feedback that we can, determining when we might want to go and present at OWF, so that, you know, a number of us go with John to present at OWF. And then we will process the other two issues and keep going through issues. Anything else we need to cover for the meeting today? Going once, going twice. All right. Thank you, everyone, for the great meeting today. Really appreciate it. We will meet again next week. Have a good one.